Recording. Good morning, everyone. We're going to continue our tutorial from pick up where we left off last time, which was we almost had the template list widget working. I think we were about 5 minutes away from having it work. So we're going to continue with that. Maybe I'll just give a brief recap out of the whole thing, but just where we had left that, and then we'll continue. And then after we get that working, I'll then show you how to make it fancier. You can add buttons within the list for each item in the list that you see. You can also add custom filtering options for filtering the content of the list. Okay. And those will take a little bit longer to teach, but we'll start working on those too after we get this working. Okay, so I'm going to start sharing my screen right here. Okay, rearrange my windows a little bit. Okay, so over here, you can see we left it right where we left it. We had just did a push of changes with maybe a slightly incorrect commit message, but that's okay. And so if I maybe go over here, from there, this takes us back here. Let's see, I think down in this window, I'm just gonna run there from this window. So our messages go here, but over here we can be editing without the messages getting in the way. Okay. And I think like last time, I don't have the IcoSphere widget. Maybe it's not even installed, or the IcoSphere add-on even installed. So I'm gonna do a make install over here again. Okay, there it goes. And then I will activate it. Let's see, I need to make it a little bit smaller so I can click on different things here. Okay. User preferences. We have a category called scene. Activate and save our user settings. And then the IcoSphere add-on is here. And you can see it's up and running, but it doesn't yet have the user interface list, the template list widget. We're just displaying one thing at a time. You know, because our value metadata attaches to objects, any object in the scene, including the lamp and the camera, which are a type of object, will show values, and the default value is 0 for anything that hasn't been touched by our add-on. But as soon as I say add random IcoSpheres, now those objects have random numbers as their values. So this is, you know, how we had left things from last time. Okay, so now let's edit panel and here's our Hello World panel. This is our panel called Hello World. It has a draw method in it, or a draw function in it. Member function of the class of draw, which is one of the required things that a BPY types panel has to have for Blender to use it properly. And it's always passed a context. And I think a panel has a panel always has, if we were to look in the Blender Python API reference, we would find out that a BPY types panel, I think, in addition to having a draw method that you're required to override. If you don't override it with your own copy, there's probably a default one that just displays something. I don't know what it displays if you don't make your own. But in addition to a built-in member class called draw, it also has member data. And one of the member data is called self.layout. Because notice in here, we're not declaring self.layout anywhere. All of a sudden, we're just saying, you know, layout equals self.layout. This is just allowing us to, you know, by doing this, every time we want to do something with the layout, we don't have to say self.layout every time we refer to it. But we don't have to do this. And then from the context, we can use the context to get the current active object. Context.object is always the active object and the active scene, the current scene. Okay, and then we do all this other stuff here. Here we're laying out a row or creating a new row in the layout. And then in that row, we're adding a label. That's our hello world label with an icon with world data. That's what gives us this up here that says hello world and this little icon that looks like a world or something. And there's a whole bunch of icons that come with Blender, and there's a way to look at what all those are. I can show you, maybe since we're talking about icons, and we're going to have some fun with icons in a minute, maybe I'll show you how to view all the icons. I think in scripting, here, there's an add-on for the text interface, the text widget interface that will display all the icons. I think, I can't, if I can remember correctly what it's called. I think it might be called, it might be in the system category. System property chart, scene information. No, it's not in there. Where is it? It's in here somewhere. Development. Here it is. The icon viewer. Turn that on, and then you saw it. I don't know if you saw it, but it, all of a sudden it shows the icon viewer down here. It's just barely visible. When you play back the video that we recorded, you'll see it happen right at that moment. I clicked on that, the icon viewer appeared here. And so here are all the icons. There's a whole bunch. I'm not sure if there's a way to add new icons. Maybe in the latest Blender 2.9, maybe there's a way to add your own icons or customize icons. But there's a whole bunch of different icons, and sometimes you can find these useful for the, you know, for the tool that you're making to kind of illustrate or give a visual hint as to what's going on. And when you hover over any of these, it gives you the name of the icon. So this one that looks like a little clock is called bpyops.iv.iconselect icon=time. But the icon is called time, right? Is really the name of that icon. And so over here, if you wanted to, you know, change this from world data to time, you would just type in the word time there, and that would be the icon for it. And you can, you know, there's a, yeah, we can go on and on. Okay, that's enough about that. We'll go back into the default setting over here. Okay, so then we lay out a row that has scene.mysettings numicos. in it as laid out as a prop, because the num icos field, I guess, of our my settings somewhere up here is the scene my settings. It's a property group. The property group has a property called numicos, which is an int property with a default value of 10 for the number of icos to create. So down at the bottom of our file, we say scene my settings numicos. This lays out that property, and it knows that that property is an integer. And so when you lay out an integer property, it lays it out like this, and it has a label inside called number of icos. That text comes from here. And an integer widget lets you interact with it. If you click in here, you can type in a new number, like 9, 0. Or you can click on the little arrows and it increments by 1 or decrements by 1 because it's an integer. Okay, that's kind of so back to 10. That's how that widget works. And then we lay out another row, and in that row we put an operator, which is the scene at icos operator. And so an operator gets laid out like a button, and it's in a new row. So that's why these are kind of in a column, because these are one. Each one of these is a separate row, and we're only putting one thing in each row. If we were to lay out two things in the same row, they would be side by side. And you can group things different ways. And in the documentation, the extensive documentation document that we made a link to, you can find good documentation there for how all the different ways you can arrange your buttons on the scene, on the screen. And you can make boxes around groups of buttons and different cool ways of doing it. Okay. And there is kind of an art and a science to the look and feel of the widgets that you have. So there's some engineering that you can, and some ergonomics, right? Computer ergonomics that you can go through. But you know, nowadays there's lots of good examples and bad examples of user interfaces. So what you can do is take notes on what you hate and write down what you like, and then figure out here in the design of your tool how you might want to lay it out for ease of use. Okay. And I think there's probably lots of YouTube videos on GUI design principles and things that you can learn from. I haven't really looked at any of those. I probably should. But maybe some of you can offline, find your favorites and maybe come back and tell us about what you've found. We can all learn from each other that way. Okay. Okay, and then. And then here is our thing that lays out the last part of this, which is the name of the icosphere, or the name of the object that's currently selected, and then its value. But we only do this, so you have to be a little bit careful about this when you do this, because in here we're making a new row, and in that row we're saying the text for it is obj.name. But what if there's not a currently selected object in the scene? This would give an error if it tried to do this. So that's why up here we say if obj not equal to none. So you have to be careful with some of the data that you're displaying in your widget. But fortunately, you can make the display dependent on the context. So if, and when I say context, I don't mean this context, maybe I mean the specific circumstances right, that are currently true about your scene, you can make the display of data sensitive to those circumstances to make the display be dynamic. For example, what if I went in here and I selected all the objects, I deleted every object. So watch what happens. If I delete every object in the whole scene, there will be no objects. And what should happen is this part of the display should go blank. And because we only display stuff if there's a current object, right? So if I delete all the objects, boom. And that disappears, right? Now that might be confusing in some user interfaces because you can't, when you don't see something, the other option is we could display something that's grayed out maybe, but we're not doing that here. And
Something that says no object selected or something like that. Which
yeah, or something like that. Yeah, exactly. Because when you don't see something, you don't know what the possibilities are, right? And so it's kind of hidden from the user. Now, if I just say random, add icosaheres, now there are objects and it'll display the name of the last one that was added. The last one that was added will always be the active one.
Tom, can I ask something? I don't know if this is relevant or not, but so from what the way I interpret this, the script that you have, this if object doesn't equal none, right? Does it? I mean, I'm confused as how it kicks in to read that line when you delete the, because to me it's like, okay, when you it's sort of part of this class, right? Part of draw, whatever. So does it, I guess my question is how does it know to go back and check whether or not there are any objects when you hit delete?
So there's an amazing amount of stuff going on behind the scenes here in Blender. We might be able to insert a print statement in here somewhere that prints to the screen, some information every time the draw function is called. So the only way this could get updated is if the draw function gets called. Mm-hmm. And the Blender user interface, and nowhere in our code do we say call the draw function. Blender's doing that for us. When we register our add-on, that turns it on. And Blender then, when part of what happens in Blender is, when you say register my add-on, is Blender goes through here and calls all the register functions of your add-on. And what the register does is it adds the names of your functions and classes and things to its internal list, to Blender's internal list of things it has to do when Blender is running. And so panels and draw functions get added to Blender's execution loop. And every time Blender says update the screen, when I delete an object, watch what happens here. So this says 009, this one is 009, I'm gonna delete 009. Boom, it's gone. There are objects in the scene, but this is designed to show only the active, it's this thing called obj context.object. Context.object is the name of the active object, I think. And there are no active objects now, because I deleted it. And when you delete the active object, Blender says, okay, that one's deleted. It was selected and it was active and it's deleted, and it doesn't automatically select another object for you. Right? Blender does not do that.
So we can only do that because Blender itself provides all that infrastructure.
Yes, Blender itself is saying every time the screen updates for whatever reason, anything about the scene, anything about it that updates, forces your draw, the draw function of your panel to be called. Yeah, that's what happens. And if I went in here and I went into a different panel, well, now my panel isn't even active. That Add Icos panel, which is over here, isn't even active anymore. So I could go over here and I could select an object, but it does not call my draw function of the Hello World panel when I do that, because that the panel is not active. So Blender knows which panels are visible and active and only calls, it's very efficient about what it does. It only calls what's necessary. So even though I have a panel, I know it's there somewhere, it actually didn't actually call my draw function. We could prove it by putting in a print statement in here that gets printed every time my draw function gets called. And if, unless the panel is visible, you wouldn't, even though I'm updating the scene here by selecting on different objects, it's not actually calling the draw function of the Hello World panel right now. But it's like, you know, when I close the door to the refrigerator, how do I know the light goes off, right? So I can't prove to you that it's not actually calling and updating that panel because we're not looking at it. And as soon as we look at it, then we're looking at it, right? We've opened the refrigerator door, right? But if we put in a print statement in here, we would see that when the panel isn't visible, the print statement wouldn't be printed. And then when it is visible, then it would be, right? We could do that, but you could maybe just trust me on that. But this gets updated like every time I move my mouse in here. If I put in the print statement, every time I move my mouse in here, you can see it's highlighting the different buttons. It has to redraw the draw pad, right? To highlight those. And there's nothing in here that says to, nothing in my code that says to do that, right? That's all built into Blender. It's awesome, right? Blender gives it, it's really fantastic. This user interface API that they have. It's one of the nicest ones out there, I think. One of the easiest to use ones of these things. Even though there's all this monkey business in here, this is actually much easier to use than many different GUI systems out there. And I wish someone would take Blender's GUI system and break it off as like a separate package so that you could use it in other tools, like in Python, just in plain Python. Plain Python does not have a very good set of different options for GUIs. There are options, but I think they're really horrible compared to and hard to use compared to what we have here. Anyway, or maybe I say that just because I haven't really learned those other things very much, but yeah, but they are hard to use. We've tried. Okay, so this is how we're doing it now. We lay out the object name with the world data icon again. That's that little icon again, the same icon. Now that we know the names of different icons, over here we could choose a different icon for, to put there. This one I like, it's called the mesh_ecosphere icon. So I might put, but of course I would have to reinstall again to see it, but okay. And then we make another row, and on the other row we lay out a property, which is the OBJ my OBJ props property, which is up here. My object properties is a property group, and one of its properties is called value one, which is a float property, default value zero. And we're laying out value one, and the text says value one with a capital V, and that's what we see over here, value with a capital V, and the value, which is the random number that was assigned to it when we use the add random icospheres button. Okay, so this is what we had. And what we were in the middle of doing was making this template list, which is the name of the kind of thing to lay out when you want to make a list of objects, or a list of items. Items don't have to be objects, it could be anything. In our case, they're objects though. And the arguments to this are the name of the UI list, which is up here, that's called my UL OBJ draw item, which is a BPY types UI list, user interface list. I guess this is just user interface list, UL. There's kind of a naming convention for things for these things that you don't have to follow. You can name it whatever you want, but trying to kind of follow the convention. Okay. Let's see if I can go to the bottom here. So this is the name of our list. Then this is just kind of a name that you assign to this thing. It can be anything. This name isn't really used. You might be able to write a script that makes use of this somehow, but you just give it some name. I think the name might have to be unique though. So be careful about naming two different lists the same name. They might have to be a unique name. And then what are the items in the list going to be? The items in the list are going to be BPY context scene objects dot objects. And I guess up here I say the scene is the context scene. Down here, this is now being very specific. I could probably just say scene here, because up here I say scene is the context.scene, and the context comes from what gets passed into the draw. So this would be kind of the shorter way of doing this. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. And so this is scene.objects. And remember, scene.objects is the list of all the objects in the scene, right? So if I go back in here to the scripting interface, and if I say bpy.con.scene.objects, it's the objects. And dot keys will show me the names of all of them. Okay, so it's a list. This is what that list is. Okay, so this is how you specify. I mean, you have to, so this is the name of the class that you've made. I'm sorry. I just did the wrong thing. This is the name of the class that's going to draw your UI list. This is the silly name you give it. And then this is the list of items that are going to be given to your class. And so it's scene.objects is how you read this. And then the next one is the name of the index variable that's going to be used to index it. And we copied, this is currently not correct because this says self active index, but we had copied this template list from Neuropil tools where the self there was a different self So we're going to fill that in with something. And what we're going to fill it in with is where the active index comes from. And the active, we have a variable called active index up here. Right there it is. So this is the my settings active index. Okay. So down here, this was the one thing we had to fix last time, the five more minutes we needed. Of course, I'm taking longer today because I'm kind of explaining things again. This is going to be scene.mySettings.ActiveIndex. So this is going to be, so here, scene.mySettings.ActiveIndex. And then this is the default number of rows to display in the list. I'll put 8 there or something. Well, we can 10. That's, of course, you're allowed to change that dynamically in the user interface, but this will be the default number that it gets set to unless you change it. Okay, so now we're ready to test this out. Except, and we can do this. We can turn this one on. This activates that part of it. And I'll leave this part up the way it was. Let's see, and I have to keep this out. I want to make it be indented the right amount. Okay. So we're going to leave this one the way it is. It's still going to do that. And we're going to, in addition to displaying the currently selected one, we're going to show this. We're going to also display this whole list. So now we're going to have some redundant information, right? We're going to leave this one up, but we're also going to show this list.
So I can ask, the list is going to be just a list of objects. Is it going to show the because you're not telling it to show the value one as well, right?
Yeah, not yet. We're going to add
not
that.
Yet. Okay.
We're going to add that later. So
Just making sure I follow. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to build this up bit by bit. But we need one more thing. We need to make a new row. If we didn't do that, then this list would be displayed in the same row as where the value is displayed. And so it would be kind of side by side. It would be be weird looking, right? It would be, back in our thing over here, we would have this and this, the whole row is this wide, but when you add two things to the row gets split in half. So our value would be the first half and our list would start over here and it would go down below that because the list is longer. Be kind of funny. Maybe that's the way you want it. To me it would be funny. Okay. So you have to remember to make a new row and then you can put the template list in the row. So it's a little funny because the thing is called a UI list. It's BPY types is a UI list. But in the layout, you call it a template list. Why they chose the names of these things. So it can be a little bit cryptic until you, but any API that you didn't make yourself is always kind of like this, like, what did they, what were they thinking, right? And they named it this, I don't know. Okay, so we're ready to go with that. So I'm gonna quit from there. I'm gonna say make install. That installs it. And then over here, I'm going to quit and fire it up again. There it is. Add icos. And look, there's our list. And it has cube, lamp, camera in the list. And if I say add random icospheres, boom, there they are. And right now it's, this is the little widget here that you click on to make the list. Oh, I guess you can't make it shorter than the default. Okay. So probably a smaller default is better so that you can compress this smaller if you really need the screen space. You can make very unfriendly user interfaces, right? that just take up so much space that you, you know, it becomes not very useful. Right? So you have to think about here your users, which, you know, in our case is us, right? Be friendly to yourself. Okay, so, but you can see how this works, right? And up here, you know, when I click on one of these, the name of the active one, its name gets changed up here, but down here, whichever one is the active one is whichever one I click on. Well, active this when I click on this, what's happening is the what this variable called the active index that we were just talking about, that gets changed, but that doesn't make the one that has the active index might not be the one that's selected, right? So this lets me perform operations on a particular one that I select here, but it doesn't have to be it might not have to be the active one in the user interface. I mean, in the 3D view window. Okay. This lets you have kind of different control over things. Okay. And you can see this is in some order here. And it doesn't look like it's alphabetical. In fact, I think the order of things here is the order in which this kind of like reverse chronological order. The most recently added one goes to the top of the list. So for example, if I chose the cube here and I made a new cube 001 is the name of the new cube, it goes to the top of the list. But this little plus here lets me open up a search widget and a sorting widget. And this lets me sort in chronological order or reverse chronological order, this button here. And then this, if I click on this, this is alphabetical or reverse alphabetical. And if I'm not alphabetical, then it's in chronological order, reverse or forward chronological order. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't notice that before. Okay. Okay. And then the search widget will filter the list. So there's a built-in filter based on the search here. So if I type in the letter C, anything with the letter C in it gets displayed. So the lamp is now not in the list anymore, but everything else has a C in it because there's icosphere and cube and camera, right? But if I type in the letter L, the only object in here that has a letter L in its name is the lamp. So there's already kind of a built-in filter, but the filter, maybe it's useful. It is useful, but it doesn't let me, you know, have finer control, because what if I wanted to find something, you know, that began with CU, or let's see, that began with the letters SP. Instead of just contain the letters SP? Or what if I wanted the name to be exactly SP, right? This doesn't let me do that, because this is going to show everything that has the letters S and P in it. Let's see. I'm trying to think of what else I could do here. Illustrate this a little bit more. Well, okay, but it's an okay filter, but it's maybe not the most precise filter you might want to make, because it only has one way of doing things. It doesn't let me, you know, have any other control. Okay. So what else do I want to show here before we move on? Okay, so let's see if we can figure out how to get the values for each one of these things displayed next to the object name. And once we have that, then we could probably get rid of this one, this widget, because now they would be completely redundant. Okay, so there is a way to lay out information next to the items in the list, and to kind of learn, remind myself how we do that. I'm going to go back to the Neuropil tools tool. Think, because in the Neuropil tools tool somewhere, do I do that anywhere? Trying to think of what we do with some of our fancier things over here. Well, I know that in the Cell Blender tool, there is a way that I'm gonna make two molecules. And see, here I've got an icon displayed, and then a color patch, and then a magnifying glass widget, and a visibility widget, and also a checkbox over there. But none of that is text. But if I make a reaction, I can say A goes to A, and you can see it's displaying the text of the reaction as text, or you know, it looks like text. And if there was a and in the parameters section, if I add a parameter and 5, you can see I've got the name of the parameter and then some text after it where it says A equals 5. And then here's the evaluated value, right? So what if I had another one called B and I said, you know, 6 times A was the value. I can see B is this expression, but here's the evaluated value of it, right? So we're giving lots of information here. So let's look in the Cell Blender code, maybe see how we did that as a good hint. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So where's that? That's probably in this parameter system. Code, maybe, because the Cell Blender code is a pretty big add-on, and we have things split up into a bunch of different ways. But what we're going to do is we're going to look in here for a panel. But this one's commented out. It's an operator. Types. Here we go. Here's the parameter system panel. This might be the panel. Although looks like it might have a comment around that too. We have a bunch of experimental things in here. Leftover things. Well, somewhere in here there's a draw that draws this panel and has a label on it that says model. So what if I look for the word model? There's also a U. This is also a UI list. Here we go. This is the one. This is our drop parameter, where it's going to lay out information in here. Aha, okay. So when you draw in here, you can make, this is inside this UI list, just like our UI list. It's called mcell ul draw parameter. And there's a bunch of stuff in here that we'll just ignore for a second. Because what I want to look down here is where he's making a column, layout.column. And where does the layout come from? Layout is one of the things that gets passed into a draw item, into the draw item. So, okay, so while we're looking at that, let's go over here. Go down to our UI list. So one of the things that gets called, that gets passed to your draw item is the layout associated with it. So in here, we're just saying layout the label, layout a label, and the label will be item.name. Well, what's item? Item is what's passed in. So this is the draw item. This gets called once for each item in the list. And what gets passed in is the item itself. And so I can say item.name. In our case, our items are objects. So objects have names, so I can say item.name. Okay. And over here, he's calling, save the icon for it. This equal that's what he's displaying. Okay, that's what it's doing. Okay, so what we can do is you can say all equal layout own. And then instead of saying layout.label, we'll say,
is that an equal sign, Tom?
Call.label.
Should it be an equal sign?
Equal sign? Where?
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and then call that label. And then we make another column. And the next column, I think we can say call dot, what if we say call dot prop I can't remember. What we want to do is, I'm jumping around a little bit. I'm going down here to where we lay out the property that's the value. That one. And, but instead of saying obj dot, I'm going to say item dot. And our items are objects, and we've added the my OBJ props metadata to objects. So I can say item dot item dot my props a value one, text value one. I think this is going to lay it out where it's going to look just like this. With this value and the value displayed, but that's going to be inside this list as another column, and it's going to be drawn right in the right place and editable. Because when you lay out a property, it lays it out like this and it's editable. So each one of these will be laid out and they'll be individually editable, I think. I think that's going to work. Let's see. And I think that's it. And then the rest of this code here was an example for how to make a custom filter, and we'll work on that next after we get this work. So I think what we can do is make multiple columns in the layout of our item that's being drawn. So we make one column, we put the name of the item in it, which is going to be the object name, and then we make another column and we lay out its value in a separate column. And draw item automatically makes new rows in the list, right? Or this gets called multiple times, and each time it gets called once for each item in the list, those go on separate rows, so we don't have to say anything about rows in here. Okay, let's try that out. So we don't know if there's a typo in there, it might crash. Okay. Oh, look at that. It's fantastic. And so I can individually edit these in my list. And there it is. So I changed the value of cube to be one, and up here it says one. And we changed the camera to be six, and when I click on the camera, it says six, right? So we're displaying that we're explaining this is a perfect example of this concept. Maybe I didn't talk about it before. There's a kind of user interface framework called Model View Controller framework, and it was invented. The concept was invented, I think, back in the 1980s or something at Xerox Menlo Park Research Center, or whatever the name of it. This famous place that invented the whole idea of the user interface, of the graphical user interface was invented at Xerox, but they never made anything from it. And then Apple, learned about their technology and just, replicated it. So, Xerox is famous for Research Park. It's called, Xerox Research Park. They're famous for inventing lots of amazing things, but then that they've given to the world, but then not capitalizing on it themselves. So it's kind of cool. Kind of tragic, but cool. I don't know. And this concept called Model View Controller. So what what they've done in Blender is they've adopted that whole design framework in how Blender is put together. But they have different names for those three components. Instead of saying model view controller, usually when you talk about Blender, you talk about data view, maybe talk about data panels operators. Okay. So it all starts with data, which is your data model, all this metadata and everything that we've been making. So each different item, is a thing that has data with it. And the data lives on the, you know, and the data lives there. And it's independent of the other things. Then the view or the panels, that this is your way of interacting and making a view of that data. And here's a good example. I've got the lamp that I'm displaying, and this is a view of the lamp and the lamp's value. But this is another view of the lamp and the lamp's value. And there's only one value for the lamp. So if I change it here, if I change this to 5 here, it changes it here and it changes it there because I have different views into the same data. And then the operators are how I interact with it. So that, you know, when I click on this, I'm now activating an operator that lets me edit the value. And that's an operator that is being given to me in the user interface as a view. I have a view of the operator also, right? Or whatever, you know, whatever. And another way of interacting with the data is in the scripting interface. So over here, let's see. Over here, if I said bpy.context.object, it says lamp. Let's see, but watch what I can do, right? In this model view controller framework, this is another, the scripting interface is another way to interact with the objects. I've got kind of a command line scripting interface way of interacting with it, of interacting with this model view controller framework. And the scripting interface, I guess, you know, the command line. So when you think about the command line, you think about, oh, I'm just typing in commands and then hitting enter and go. And that would be kind of a traditional way of thinking about what the command line is doing. But another way of thinking about the command line is that it's a model view controller. So the data is my command that I type in, and the view of it is it's displaying me so I can see the command, right? And then the controller is I hit enter, and that command gets interpreted by an operator, and then something happens, right? So, but you know, in before they invented this model view controller framework, people didn't conceive of user interfaces this in this very powerful way. And when you were writing your code to implement different things, you could make code that was like spaghetti that kind of mixed everything together. But as soon as you think about it in this model view controller framework, you can think about, okay, I'm doing something. What part of what I'm doing is the data? What part of it is what happens to the data? And what part of it is the display of the data, right? And then you, when you think about it that way, now you can easily keep things straight, and maybe with command line, it's not so important to keep things straight like that because every time I hit, I can only enter one command at a time, and when I hit enter, it's only operating on one command at a time. So things are kind of done in what's called an atomic way that you can only have one thing happen at a time, right? But in a graphical user interface where the user could be moving their mouse and clicking on things in different parts of the screen at different times and jumping around, and you have to update the view so that the user always has a consistent view of what's happening. And what if you have things happening asynchronously in the background? I've clicked on something and that takes a while to happen. Meanwhile, while that's happening, I can go to another part of the interface and click over there. Everything can get out of sync very easily and very quickly, unless you have things really, really split up into this way. And by keeping the data separate from the view of the data and what happens to the data, it makes it much easier to keep everything consistent without having deadlocks and block and blockages and things like this, because it's all about transactions. And each different thing you do is a transact. You know, the operators are doing transactions that operate on the data, and it can be treated as a transaction. And that one transaction, you can only have one transaction happening at a time on the data, and if you want to keep everything consistent. And so the transactions could go into a queue, into a, like a FIFO queue, where there's a thing that's processing the transactions, and it's only allowing one thing to happen at a time. But the user could be clicking all over the place and submitting all these events that are, you know, that have to be handled, but they should be handled in temporal order, one thing at a time. And maybe one click invalidates another click. There could be that you could have transactions that handle things that way. Anyway, so going into a little bit too much detail. So and we're past our 11 o'clock, but let's just let me just show you this thing that I wanted to demonstrate here. So I have the camera is the lamp. The lamp is the active object. But I can say, what if I want to say OBJ is equal to what is it? epy.data.objects. Make sure I have that. Yeah, so now, so the OBJ I have now that I've just made a reference to is the cube. So my thing called OBJ is there. And I can say obj.cubes. So this shows me my metadata. So I because we have the Cell Blender add-on also active, we have a key called mcell. That's what contains all the properties and metadata that we need for Cell Blender to work on. There's a whole universe inside there. But we have our new one that we made called my OBJ props, right? So I could say my OBJ props dot keys, and there's our value one. So what I can do is I can say value one, and I can see its value is one, which is consistent with what it says up here, right? But I can say value one equals 20. So I'm going to set it right here, but we're going to see it change up there as soon as I hit that. But we didn't see it change. Because I think when I do it this way, it doesn't trigger a change to the user interface. So the draw function was not called when I did that. But as soon as I move my mouse into that field, it's going to change to 20. And let's see, if I move my mouse into the 3D view window, okay, and then I move my mouse over here, and then I move my mouse there, it changed.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
this
I know,
actually magic.
I do realize, all the things that are going on in Blender, the visual interface.
I'm a little surprised it didn't change right at that instant. I think maybe in Blender 2.9, they may have fix this so that when I change it here, it knows that this depends on that value. And when I change that value, the dependency goes all the way into here and it knows it has to redraw. It may have fixed that. Or there might be a way for me to register a connection between, you know, this value changing and that. There is a way to make dependencies between different properties, and I don't know, or maybe this is too hard for, and maybe too expensive, computationally expensive for them to implement all the way. I'm not sure, but anyway, but you saw it happen. So that's pretty cool.
I was a bit surprised that the object that's displayed as the selected object doesn't change, right?
Yeah.
So even though we redefined OBD to be cube, not lamp.
Well, I didn't redefine. I just made a handle to it. So I didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
This is just a convenient handle. So I didn't have to type this whole thing in when I did it.
Yeah. So this is not how internally
This word OBJ doesn't mean anything. I called it food, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Or I could have typed in. Let's see. Copy paste. I could have done it this way. Value 1, you know, equals 10. Let's watch that happen again. I have to say
props.
My OBJ props dot value 1 equal 10. Okay. So see, if I move up here, and then I move, as soon as I move into this space, it then updates.
There is a command like select, deselect. You could do that, what Melanie means, in from the command line, right?
Yeah.
So what if
I did this to the lamp? So lamp is the active object. So what if I do this to the active object? So if I put lamp here instead, and I change its value to 30 or something. If it's the active object, will it update instantly? And let's see. No, it does not.
I mean, that makes sense, right? Just because it's the active object doesn't mean that the redrawing rule necessarily changes.
Yeah. Right. And if I move into the three, and even if I move here in the 3D view window, and if I click and even rotate this, right, and even change to a different object. As soon as I change to a different object.
Yes, because then it has to redraw the panel anyway. As soon as you select a different object.
Because the panel has this key, right? But if we didn't have this key to the active object up here, maybe it wouldn't have redrawn. That's a good point.
That's very cool.
Anyway, okay, so we're at that was the stopping point I wanted to get to. We go back over here, and okay. Yeah. So I'll quit from here, and I'll post, let's see, we'll do a git commit minus A, and say, enough. Okay. There it is. So I will stop recording for today.